This is URN Sport.
Good evening, all team. I hope you're doing well. You're listening to the sports show here on URN. I'm Chris Young. But first off, like I said, we're going to talk a little bit about England versus Bangladesh. So it was England versus a Bangladesh cricket board at 11. And Harry, basically, what happened?
Chris, England won the one-day series with Bangladesh last Wednesday with a four-wicket victory over their hosts, chasing down their target of 278 in 47.5 overs. Rashid again shined with the ball in turning conditions, taking four wickets to restrict Bangladesh to 277 for six off their 50 overs. In the chase, Ben Duckett further staked his claim for a place in the first Test 11 of the winter on Thursday by scoring a 68 ball 63. He added to his half century in the first ODI with a mature innings under a lot of pressure. He was partnered by Kent wicketkeeper Sam Billings, who stepped in for the injured Jason Roy. Billings too made a half century and further showed England's strength in depth. And finally, Ben Stokes saw England over the line with a calm 47 not out. It's in a series where he's shown a lot of potential to become a senior England batsman in the top order, as he's got 100 in the first ODI as well. Well, the game was a fitting end to a fascinating series, and England's victory ended Bangladesh's two-year unbeaten streak at home. And the series shows that England's young players can adapt to foreign conditions and can also play under pressure, even without the key names of Owen Morgan and star batsman Joe Root. And well, that sets us up for the Test series, which is coming up this Thursday. And we welcome back Alistair Cook from the birth of his second child yesterday, and Joe Root, who was rested for the ODI series. England really have a few selection dilemmas, a couple to do with the spinners and who plays, but mainly who's going to partner Alistair Cook for the first Test. It seems like it's going to be a straight matchup between Duckett and Haseeb Hameed. Duckett got 250s in the warm-up games over the weekend, and Hameed got an unbeaten 50 in the second warm-up game. And finally, Alistair Cook is set to break Alex Stewart's record as the most capped Englishman in Test cricket, and Cook is already England's leading run scorer in Test and will overtake the tally of 133 caps in the Test at Chittagong on Thursday.
Yeah, so it's quite exciting times actually for England. It's interesting as well because Bangladesh and the rest of the subcontinent region always seems to be a bit tricky for England. But who would you say has been the standout player so far from Bangladesh for England?
For England, well, there's been a few. I mean, Billings did really well, stepped up, came in without much cricket and scored a really mature half century. Opening the innings, chasing what is quite a good score in the subcontinent. Ben Duckett, obviously, with his 250s. Ben Stokes, as I said. And then with the ball, like Rashid's been really good. It's not been a great series. Obviously, Jake Ball took a fiver in the first ODI, but other than that, the bowlers haven't.
Nottinghamshire's own Jake Ball.
Just throwing that in there, of course.
I think, you know, you mentioned it earlier about up and coming test matches. You know, we've obviously got, was it, two tests against Bangladesh, and then we've got our five test series against India in the winter. And I think that really is, you know, it's going to be a decision. How many spinners do they take? Do they take Moeen Ali and Rashid, or do they go just with the one spinner? And you know, I think it definitely does depend on, you know, subcontinent or whatever. Obviously, the cricket pitches are going to be a lot faster in the subcontinent. They're going to be a lot drier. There is going to be a bit of spin on some of them. It depends on how India want to bring their attack to us. Are they going to set it up so that it's suiting their bowlers, or, you know, how are they going to model the pitch? Are they going to model it so that it's suiting spinners, or are they going to have just all out pace in that Indian side? And you'd assume that with India being India, that they would favour the spinners. You know, they have troubled us a lot in the past when we've played against them in the subcontinent with their spin. It's absolutely amazing, and it'll be interesting to see what Alistair Cook does.
Well, you have to look at what Pakistan's done over the years. Just two spinners just always seems to overdo us. In that case, who are you guys thinking should be in the starting 11 for England over the weekend? Well, Ben Duckett has got a good shout.
I think Hameed will open because he's my Lancashire favourite. But I think Hameed will open. Hameed will open, and Duckett will probably slot into the middle order somewhere, probably about four. And hopefully Gary Balance is dropped because he's not a great batsman.
Oh, no, I think Balance is a bit of a weird one, isn't he? Like, there are times when he had a really good start for England, they just kind of like dipped further. So, what, as cricket experts, what would you guys say Gary Balance needs to work on in order for him to you know, regain that form he first had for England.
He just has a horrible technique for international level, and when the pace really comes on, if you take a step back as your first movement, you're going to be so much later on the ball, and it's so much harder to get runs by being so defensive as well, and he doesn't really help.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned that, you know, the way that he does play, you know, the crease is not, it's not a large amount of room to manoeuvre. No. You know, if you're stepping back, you're going to be a lot, you're going to be cramped up a lot more, and you know, you're not going to be able, if you're getting down on the front foot like we see Joe Root do, like we see Alistair Cook do on several occasions, you know, if you're taking that first step out, it's giving you, you know, you're showing your opponent, not you might not be perhaps giving yourself a bit more time, but it's showing the opponent that you are confident to go into the shot and you're not going to be cowering away from it.
Hi, this is Jeff Selling from Sky Sports and you're listening to URN Sport.
And so we're talking a little bit about the Team GB parade and of course in Ward Woman in particular.
No problem with the start. Jonas has gone away well, so Zelinka in lane one. And right on the outside is Fountain of the United States. And Ennis coming through along with Zelinka on the far side. Ennis is going to take this. Ennis wins it. Zelinka second. Fountain third. 12.54. That's astonishing.
Jess Ennis's early retirement, a big shock across the sporting world, but we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But first of all, I think it's fitting we only pay tribute to how amazing the athletes and the para-athletes did in Rio. Naomi, what are your thoughts about how the guys did in Rio in general?
It was amazing. Like, it's the best ever for the team. So it's really good to finish second in the Olympics. It's amazing to come above China. It's really special. So yesterday's Team GB's most successful Olympians and Paralympians paraded through the streets of Manchester, finishing in Albert Square. Despite the heavy rain, the streets were packed as over 150,000 people showed their support and came out to celebrate the record-breaking performances of Team GB. This year, the Team GB Olympians finished second in the medal table, winning 67 medals in total and 27 golds. Meanwhile, the Paralympians were celebrating 147 medals, 27 more than in the previous Olympics in London. The parade was attended by several big names such as Max Whitlock, Jay Jones, Nicola Adams, Dame Sarah Storey and Jess Ennis-Hill, who retired last week, as well as the gold medal winning women's hockey team. The parade ended in Albert Square with performances from the Kaiser Chiefs and Rebecca Ferguson. It was a fantastic celebration for everyone, and today the celebrations continued in Trafalgar Square in the capital.
A little text that's come through asking, what about the two imposters? That is actually such a good point. Yeah, thanks again for getting in, like I said. I can't believe that. Like, somehow two guys managed to sneak on board the bus and, well,
Jack, I mean, I didn't know about it until literally, you know, about half an hour ago when you were reading the story from the Telegraph, I think it was, or the Guardian, and I looked at it and I was like, what? How, like, come on, like, surely you, at an event like this, you'd have a lot better security. But I mean, you know, fair play to them. I mean, they managed to get on board.
It's only right we talk a little bit more about Jess Ennis, who sadly said she will not be able to compete in the World Championships next year, despite hoping to due to the injury. Naomi, what do you have to say about that?
I think it's the right thing to do at the end of the day, because she doesn't want to get any more injuries. She wants to end on a high. She has done. She got another silver in Rio, adding to her Olympic gold in London. She's had an amazing career and she wants to leave with a legacy, and she wants to inspire people and stay involved in the sport, which I think it's the right choice.
Yeah, and just to add to that as well, you know, I think we do have a good couple of young athletes coming through in the heptathlon as well. We've got
Katarina Johnson-Thompson.
We've got Katarina Johnson-Thompson. You know, she is going to be someone who Jess Ennis, or rather she's going to look up to Jess Ennis and be like, well, one day I want to be like her. You know, she's still very, very young, and you know, to have some, she was in the same training camp as Jess Ennis, you know, to be stood next to someone who's a multiple Olympic medal winner is absolutely amazing, and it's got to be a massive confidence boost for her, although she didn't fare so well this year in Rio. But you know, for her, just to have someone like Jess Ennis Hill, who's always going to be there for her to chat to if she's ever struggling with anything, it's going to be absolutely amazing. And I reckon reckon in 2020 that she could be on with a real chance for getting at least a silver medal.
Sorry,
Johnson Thompson, I was going to say, she was 19 at the London 2012 Games, so in that position with Ennis at the age of 26, 27, I think she was, in a kind of mentor sort of role for the likes of... the likes of Katarina Johnson-Thompson, whilst being in the prime of her career, where she won the gold medal with some fantastic performances, as you saw in the hurdles in the clip that we just played. I think turning to the point about her retirement, I think it's probably the right time to do so. She was disappointed with the silver in Rio, even though that is a phenomenal achievement at the age of 30 to do that. It probably is the right time for her to retire if her body is suffering due to the excessive training that athletes take on board.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think Naomi as well, I think in 2012, no one had as much pressure on themselves as Jess Ennis. She literally was the poster girl. And it's just amazing how she managed to cope with it, but also managed to deliver on the biggest stage by winning gold against really strong competition.
Yeah, like you're saying, she was the poster girl everywhere you were. You heard about Jess Ennis. If you didn't know who she was, you would know before the Olympics. And then when she got the gold on that Super Saturday, just really livened up the atmosphere. She dealt with the pressure, and that's when the Olympics in London really came to life, when she won that gold. And since then, like, things have only looked good. And it's a shame that she's retired, but it's for the best, in my opinion. She's dealt with the pressure, and she's had a great career.
It's a little bit of the tennis, and it's been a big week for Andy Murray, hasn't it, Jack?
Yes, it has indeed. Obviously, for those of you that don't know, the Shanghai Masters was last week. Murray, of course, did win in the final, and he beat Roberto Bautista Agut from Spain in straight sets. He did sort of come under a bit of pressure, taking the first set after a tie break, 7-6, 7-1, and then in the second set, he really just blew him away, 6-1. It was, you know, against the world number 19. Bautista Agut did beat Djokovic in the semi-final, so, you know, going into it, no game's an easy game. Murray must have known that this guy's on his form. You know, he beat Djokovic in the semi-final, so it's never going to be an easy game. But yeah, I mean, it does put Murray in good stead to, you know, perhaps maybe he's got possibility to obviously take the number one spot from Djokovic. He goes to Vienna next week to play in the Vienna Open, and if he does win that, which I'm sure we're all in this room hoping that he does win that,
fingers crossed,
then the next event will be the Paris Masters. Now Djokovic isn't playing in Vienna, so Djokovic will only be in action next again in the Paris Masters, and that happens of course at the end of the month. I think it starts on October 31st. So yeah, I mean, if Murray wins that and Djokovic doesn't make the final of the Paris Masters, then by the way that it's scored in tennis, then that will mean that Murray will become number one
because
for the first time ever.
Roughly like 900 points,
yeah,
isn't
it's about
it?
Really, points, really, and yeah, the way that tennis scoring works, I mean, we could try and figure it out all day, but I still probably wouldn't understand how it works. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, Murray's, ever since he lost in the Davis Cup semi-final against Del Potro, he's won 23 straight sets.
Ever
since then, you know, it's absolutely amazing. He's in the form of his life, and if there's ever a time that he can nick that number one spot from Djokovic, it's definitely now. And I think He's definitely got the power and the experience to do so. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he can do it.
And I think it really is because he demands such high standards. What do you think's happened to Djokovic this calendar year? He's kind of not at the levels we would expect of him.
I'm not really sure what's going on, to be honest. Like, these things happen. Maybe he's just getting tired as well because it's coming to the end of the year and it's been a long year. But we'll see how things go in Paris, because obviously it's indoors and he would be the favourite. But I don't think you can rule Murray out on his form. If he keeps it up, like, yes, he'll get tired, but they should be used to... They're used to these matches now and the long games. And also, although Murray's been to the finals, he hasn't had many three-setters. Like, most of it has been straight sets, so it's not been too straining for him.
It's interesting with, like, Djokovic, because, like, he has accomplished the Grand Slam. Mm. He has done it. But suddenly he's like, was he knocked down the first round, was it, of the Olympics? Had a pretty poor few sets of tournaments, like, for example, losing in Shanghai Do you think this is the start of the end of Djokovic, to throw the question out there?
I'd say it's way too early for that. You know, I think he's definitely got another a good solid 3 or 4 years left in him to be at the, you know, at the top of his game. What one impact that I do think has sort of reinvigorated Murray is the fact that he's reappointed Ivan Lendl as his coach.
That, you know, even yeah, though, I agree.
Even
that's
though,
a big move.
You know, you watch him when he's winning Wimbledon, and even Lendl doesn't have any expression whatsoever. But, you know, you can just tell that he is very committed, and you can tell that Murray just doesn't want to let him down. You know, he puts in so much work when he goes into training, and even Lendl is a very, you know, he's a very stern-looking character, but you can just tell that there is something there. Obviously, you know, he left, even Lendl wasn't his coach for a while, and Murray just seemed a bit off the pace. And now...
Because it was Maresma, wasn't
yeah,
it?
For a bit, bringing back Ivan Lendl has been an absolutely... amazing boost for his confidence, and I think that even Lendl really believes in him, and yeah, you know, it's absolutely amazing for Murray.
And then Naomi, do you want to say anything? Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm just agreeing with Jack that the reappointment of Ivan Lendl has really made Murray better this year. And as to when you're looking at Djokovic, I don't think that it's the beginning of the end. I just think it's a dip in form. I think he'll get better again. I don't think
he'll be back with the off-season. He'll be back. He loves the Australian Open as well. I think he's a six-time winner there, so
yeah, something
I'm
like
sure he'll be back with
it. One thing I would add is that Andy Murray and Djokovic have become much more similar players in the last year. I think based on the factor of getting around the court quickly. I think Djokovic was always good at that, but that's something that Murray's really developed in his game in the past year, possibly with the changing coaching with Lendl coming in, as well as his mentality as well. I think
he seems a lot more
ruthless on the court, and not afraid to kind of hit big shots and kind of go across the court at pace, which is something that he really failed at before Lendl came back into the coaching scene.
I did ask you midway through the show if it was based on this year so far, who'd you guys nominate for Sports Personality of the Year? So we've only got 2 minutes left. We're going to start with you, Harry.
I'd go with Jason Kenny again. Yeah. Another hometown, well, not hometown, but he's from Bolton. That's close. I'll claim
so
that.
So many local.
And he's been phenomenal. I think he's got 7 gold medals now, I think.
Something ridiculous. Yeah, I think it's like
3 in London, 3 in Rio, and 1 in Beijing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's, was it 7 golds and 1 bronze or something, isn't it? Something like
phenomenal.
That. Phenomenal. And then what about yourself, Naomi? Who would you go for?
I think Max Whitlock, because I think 2 golds in gymnastics at sport, which isn't Great Britain aren't really known for doing amazingly in gymnastics. I think it's an incredible achievement. And he's been nominated previously for Sports Personality, but I think this year could do it.
And then very quickly, Joe, and also then Jack.
I think there's only one person that can win it, and that's Andy Murray with the years he's had winning Wimbledon.
He has had such a phenomenal year. He's won Wimbledon again.
Yeah, he's won Wimbledon again. Finalist in the, what was it, the US Open? Was it the US Open that he won?
It was Australian.
Australian Open.
6 titles in
6
the year.
Titles this year. Incredible achievement. Yeah.
And then quickly, Jack.
I mean, it's interesting you say that. I've just got Andy Murray is obviously favourite, but just looking down this list, you've got Alistair Brownlee, obviously the triathlete. Yeah. We've got Anthony Joshua, the boxer. But my pick out of this list would have to be Mo Farah. You know, obviously doing, you know, winning gold medals is absolutely amazing. And to recover from that trip as well and still win the gold is absolutely amazing. He's been heroic for the last couple of years as well.
Thank you so much, guys. And thank you so much for your time. And like I said, I'm Chris Young. It's been a pleasure, guys. Thank you much and have a good night.
Hi, I'm Paul Merson, has-been footballer, and you are listening to URN Sport.